Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello guys, Merry Christmas! If you are indeed a person who celebrates Christmas, I wish you a wonderful and joyful Christmas with your family. As for me, I'm Jewish. My wife Tiffany is Catholic. Saying that both feels like a kind of a lie because, oh, by the way, hi, I'm Nicole. This is my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Hi. How are you? It feels like kind of a lie to say that, not because she wasn't raised Catholic and I am not culturally Jewish, but neither of us is very organized religious-y at all. This is not to say that's a bad thing. It's just, or a good thing. It's just what is. Having said that, we love joyful holidays because why the hell not? And so we celebrate Hanukkah and Christmas every year. In the past, we used to flip-flop it. So one year, we would light the candles and give the kids their presents on Hanukkah. And the next year, we would still light the candles each night, but we would do Christmas morning, and it really depends on when they go to their dad's. And this year, our kids lobbied us, ages 13, 15, 16, 17, and 18, and said, we like it when we get all our presents at the same time because it's freaking fun. And we said, all right. So even though we don't have the kids for Christmas Day this year, as the calendar has worked out, we're doing fake Christmas on Christmas Eve. So by the time, Christmas Eve day morning. So by the time this airs, we will have already given our kids our presents, and I'm so excited. I'm like, really? There's a couple ones in there that are super surprises. So I'm very excited about that, to watch their faces. I love it. I love it. And like, I am not a Pollyanna mama. I am not one of these people who's like, everything about mothering is a joy. I don't feel that way at all. I feel like a lot of mothering is, as I say, my favorite quote from Jerry Maguire, an up at dawn pride swallowing siege that I will never quite tell you about. So I'm not a Pollyanna person, but I love giving gifts. I love giving surprises. Anybody who's followed me for the long haul, anyone who's been with me for years, knows my favorite thing to do is give my daughter Charlotte gifts that are going to move and surprise her and video her, because she always bursts into tears. And it's the cutest thing. One of the best videos ever, and maybe I can unearth it and put it on social media if I can find it, is when she and my stepdaughter Stella were obsessed with Hamilton, obsessed, listening to it day and night, singing every single word, acting out the Hamilton pieces, the different songs, with costumes, verbatim. It was amazing. And it was the time where Hamilton tickets were mad expensive and impossible to get, and we were able to secure some tickets, and we gave them the tickets on the day we were going to go. It was one of those, here's the ticket, pack your bag, we're going to New York. And the sobbing, it was the cutest thing ever. So anyway, there's not going to be those kind of moments, I think, this year, because the older kids are the ones that are getting these kind of bigger surprises, and they don't tend to burst into tears. But all told, I love giving presents to people. It's my fave. It's my absolute fave. It's as joyful as I get. And I'm saying I'm not one of those Pollyannas, so it's just part of me. So anyway, happy Christmas. You know, maybe you're listening to this. Okay, so let's think of all the scenarios in which you might be listening to this. First of all, you might not give a shit about Christmas at all. There's you. Then there's the people who it was just wonderful. There's the people that it was an epic fail and all they want to do is go into the corner and cry. There's those of us who are alone for Christmas. I know I want to send my real, true love and heart out to people who are isolated because of this COVID thing. I send you love and connection, and I know it's hard, and I'm really, really hopeful that 2021 is going to bring us, I know it's not a magic thing, but it's going to bring us some better energy and some hope. Maybe you're an essential worker or a healthcare worker, and although Christmas is a holiday, you need to work it. I send you incredible gratitude. Let me think. Oh, maybe you're a parent who got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and now you're trembling and nauseous and all you want is a little time to yourself and your joyful kids are like stepping on your head and playing loud toys and, you know, you want to crawl into a hole. Maybe that's you. I don't know if I covered everyone. Listen, if I didn't cover you, just know I see you. We are all the same, essentially, in our hearts and in our struggle and in our pain. We all experience life the same, really, in its essence. And so I'm here with you. I myself may be kind of chilling right now as you listen to this because my kids go to their dad's on the 24th, and I have not had a break from being in the house with all of my children since last March. And I am just about ready for some quiet and to do a little bit of nothing. So my hope is as you're listening to this, I'm doing nothing. So we'll see, right? We'll see. Okay. Anyway, I love you. I'm here with you. I'm glad today is Christmas and I have the most precious gift to give to you today. My precious gift to give to you is my experience of meditation. I think the reason this gift feels so precious is because it has been so hard fought for me. My brain, since I was a little girl, has moved so fast. I am such a doer to the point where I always trip over something and fall, physically and metaphorically. I'm quick. I'm distractible. I thrive on doing 5 things at once. It's when I feel most at peace. I'm frenetic. Until I learned in my later years of elderly life to really, really use the tools to calm down and slow down, I definitely was a bit of an energizer bunny and it wasn't always a good thing. So when I looked at meditation, when it first became obvious to me that it was a thing and it was probably helpful, the first thing I said forever, for years, is I could never do that. I don't have the brain for meditation. I can't do it. It's not for me. I could never do it right. There's my perfectionism creeping in. And I just shut the door on it. And I didn't do it forever. And so what's interesting, however, is in the realm of self-care. I mean, anyone listening to this podcast is somewhat interested in self-care because why else would you be here? And in growth and in doing the work you need to further your peace and the peace of others in your life. So in the spirit of self-care, I posted on Instagram the other day, and if you're not following me, please come over at Nicole Sachs LCSW. I posted on Instagram a graphic that said, let's actually look at it because I want to quote myself accurately. A mother who heals herself heals her children. And the first line of the caption is, every bit of work you're doing on yourself matters. And Ram Dass, who is who was an incredible spiritual leader, passed away a couple of years ago. He wrote this epic, iconic book called Be Here Now. And in Be Here Now, one of the pages that really got me was when he talks about what we really need to do for our children. Because I think that especially current day parenting, we're always scrambling so much of like how to be a better parent. And basically the entire energy of that page is just, you don't need to do anything for your children. Just work on yourself. Just work on yourself. That is the gift you need to give to your children. And I am so overwhelmed by the truth of that. And this is obviously not just for parents, it's for anyone. Because first of all, everyone has some young person in their lives that looks at them. And even if you don't, this is for you. Because improving ourselves is a gift we give not only to ourselves, but to everyone we interact with. And since human beings are so hardwired for connection and for warmth and for closeness with other human beings, we all want to be as accepted and as nurtured and as invited as we can. And that is what happens when we work on ourselves. And so when I realized that meditation was not only a mindfulness practice that would bring me more personal peace and spiritual connection, but it also was a physical rewiring of the brain, allowing us to slow down, allowing us to pause, which, as anyone who listens to my work knows, there is a huge power in the pause, and I am constantly talking about it, because when we pause, we have the power to respond to life, not to react, and our reactions are what gets us in a lot of trouble, whether it be with ourselves or with others, with our behaviors. And so, you know, I heard all about that, and like I said, I just would dismiss it. Over and over and over again, I am just too crazy. My mind is insane. I'm like a hamster on a wheel. You know, and a lot of, let's just like give a little bit of airtime to the positive of that. I'm an incredibly productive person. I'm very able. I'm very capable. I can walk into a room and pretty much talk to anyone. There are a lot of good things about the way I'm wired, but there are a lot of bad things too that really steal from me. And one of them is I really had trouble relaxing. I really had trouble having fun. Like, what's fun? Like, I'm just a productive person that's always going. And like the concept of like fun, I'm still struggling with it, but I'm working on it. So anyway, meditation was sort of something. First of all, I tried it out of shame. Let's start there, because everyone else was meditating and I knew on paper the benefits of it. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm a shitty grower if I don't meditate. So let's try to meditate. And I would do it, and inevitably I would find that I was doing it wrong. My mind kept wandering. Sometimes my mind would wander for, it felt like, minutes before I even realized how far away I had gotten from just my breath or a mantra or whatever. A lot of times also I would like fall asleep sitting up. I used to try to meditate laying down because I just wanted to basically take a nap, and then I would fall asleep immediately. So, okay, so forget that. So then I would meditate sitting up, and even sitting up, I could zone out so completely that basically I'm asleep, and then I'd feel my head bob down. And all of these things led me to quit, because I decided that A, I'm a bad meditator, which made me feel bad about myself in other ways. And B, I thought, what's the point of doing something if you're going to do it poorly and you're not getting the benefits of it? These are the lies and the stories I used to tell myself about meditation. And then something happened to me that was very pivotal. And I'm going to get a little bit weird here. And if you can hear it, you can hear it. And if not, forgive me. But so here's my deal in life. I'm this regular person who, I guess my greatest motivation as a very young person was to have a family. I was very, very maternal from a really young age, to the point where when I was young, even through high school, it never really occurred to me that it was very important for me to have a career. I definitely wanted an education, and I definitely wanted to have possibilities for a career, which is why initially I got my undergrad in psych, because I thought, okay, well, if eventually I study to be a therapist, at least that's something I can do very part-time while I'm raising my kids. My whole motivation as a young person was I just wanted family. And that was how I felt. And so I did. I went and got my undergrad, and I was working in New York City, and I met the man that would become my husband. And we decided that we had a lot of the same life goals. And we started, you know, dating seriously and living together. And in living with him, he was in veterinary school, and it required, if I wanted to actually be with him and not have a 4-year long distance relationship, that I moved to the Midwest. And at the time, the job that I was in the city was in New York City, was in marketing communications for an online startup. And at the time, it's 1996 or 97. That kind of business did not exist yet in the Midwest. It was very new, and it was pretty much in Silicon Valley and Silicon Alley, which was in Chelsea, New York City, which is where I worked. And so the skill set that I had developed being the marketing communications manager at an internet startup, they didn't really have a job that I could visualize in St. Paul, Minnesota at that time. They were website builders, they were developers, but I wasn't a tech person, I was a people person. And those kind of jobs weren't available. So when I went to move to St. Paul to live with David, I, for some reason, was like, let me just use this precious time in my life to get my master's degree. You know, I was accepted into a fantastic school, and I decided to get my higher education. So once again, still not really thinking that I was going to be anything other than maybe a little bit of something on the side while I raised kids. You have to also understand that in parallel to this journey, I had the whole chronic pain journey happen. So I had been diagnosed with this crazy acute spinal condition. I was told I would never have biological children. I was told I would never travel or play sports or all those things. I was opened to Dr. Sarno and mind-body medicine. I started to understand that, integrate that into my life. And so in concert with the story I'm telling you about my actual life, I was also awakening to the mind-body connection for myself. And I was living free as a result of it. Still no concept that I was going to become whatever it is I've become. So I go to school, I get my degree. I work for a little while in school social work. And I get all my clinical licensure, and then I start having kids. And I had 3 babies under 5 years. I had Isabella, and then 22 months later, I had Oliver, and then 3 years later, I had Charlotte. So now I'm busy. I stopped working altogether, and I'm full-time raising these kids. Once again, didn't even really occur to me that I would ever go back to work. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't, maybe when they're all older. I mean, what's so crazy to me about a spiritual journey is we are so sure of what we are and who we are and what we're doing at times in our lives, or at least I have been, and it has never been the end of the story. So let's see, how did it all really happen? I guess Charlotte was like almost a year, and I decided I got some calling that I wanted to go into private practice. And through my work with Dr. Sarno and lecturing at NYU, he started to say to me, Nicole, really, I say this humbly, but I have to just say that Dr. Sarno used to say to me, Nicole, you're so good at explaining this. You're better than me at explaining this theory that I've started. Can you start to come more and more to NYU and explain this to the groups? And so I was doing that. And then when I started my private practice up in the suburbs of New York, he said, let me start referring into your practice. So now I'm starting to get direct clients, patients of Dr. Sarno. And little by slowly, I start realizing this work is my jam. This is lighting me up like nothing else. And this is making me understand I've got actually like a purpose in life, crazy as it sounds. Like, I love being a mom, and I am an excellent, you know, because of the TMS work that I did, that I was not parenting my kids through the lens of my own crap. I was a really good mom, but I also was starting to awaken to the fact that I actually wanted to do something with this work. My practice grew. I ended up getting divorced, moving down to Delaware, you know, my whole personal journey, remarrying. And I opened a practice down here, and it was just thriving. And it started to become too much for me. And then I started getting clients from all over and doing remote work. And I started talking to one of my very educated clients in New York City who had several degrees from Yale and from Harvard and was very studied in psychology and in religion, actually. And she said to me, you need to write a book. It's not enough that you sit for however many hours you can physically sit each week with people. You need to write a book. And that's what started everything. By the way, I'm going to have a point to this that's going to get back to meditation. If you're so bored and you hate me, I'm sorry. So basically, I wrote the first edition of The Meaning of Truth in 2012 or 2013. And it started me on understanding that I had a greater message to carry. And what it evolved into was me understanding that I was being pulled, and it started to awaken to my spirituality, which of course really blossomed and sort of exploded when I got sober. It'll be nearly 6 years ago. And so as my spiritual journey starts pulling me, this is where it's going to get a little weird, I start feeling incredibly discontent about my ability to carry this message. That I was so passionate now. Now I'm off the charts passionate. I want everyone in the world to know that mind-body healing is a possibility, that this work works, that I want everyone to know, wait a second, I'm watching people go from wheelchairs to playing 18 holes of golf. I'm watching people go from disability to full-time work. I'm watching people go from suicidal ideation and feeling like they're completely hopeless and helpless to a life full of freedom and possibilities. Everyone needs to know about this. And it started to make me unhappy. It started to make me discontent all the time. I was never doing enough. This urgency, this desperation to share and share and share. And nothing was happening quick enough for me. And it was really making me depressed. And about a year ago, I had an incredibly consequential meeting / session with a spiritual teacher of mine. And she said to me, and it wasn't her that was talking, it was truly channeled. It was truly channeled. And I believe this from my source energy. You can call it God, you can call it the universe, you can call it goodness, you can call it whatever you want to call it. It was channeled. And she said to me very sternly, I know you try to meditate here and there, and I know that it's a sporadic practice. You must sit in the silence every day for 30 minutes, or what you want, this passionate thing that it's all you want, which is to carry this message to the global community, it's not going to happen because you are so fast and you are so scattered and you are so full of desire. And although desire is a positive word, when you are in the kind of desire where you are so desperate to have what you need that you're not going to be okay if you don't get it, it's actually causing a great amount of toxicity and anger and sadness and shame and grief to be added to your emotional reservoir every day. And I was doing that. I knew it. And she said, plus, this isn't just about you. You know, if you are really to be this voice, and guys, I'll tell you, those of you listening to me right now, the podcast hit 1 million downloads last weekend, by the way. I'm starting to actually become this voice. I'm getting there. I have so much more to do. I have such big plans, but I'm getting there. And she said, if you want to become this voice that you are envisioning, that you are calling in, that you are manifesting, you need more information. This is not just coming from your own mind. You need to open yourself up to the teachings of the greater energy. And you must do this through meditation. Now, this was a bit of a bullying call. You know, the word of God comes crashing down on your head. You don't necessarily have a choice. So I'm not suggesting that my message is going to motivate you in the same fashion. But I want to tell you what's happened to me since. So this meeting that I had with her was on January 10th of last year. So it's coming up on a year. And my Insight Timer meditation, which is a free app, Insight Timer, which I love, I meditate with it every day, which just means I press 30 minutes and it dings when I'm done, but it keeps track of how many days I've meditated consecutively. And it's like at 300 and, you know, lots, because I'm coming up on 365, which will be on January 11th, which also happens to be my father's birthday. My father, who passed away when I was 27. And so I have done this. I have done this as a non-negotiable. And this is the most important thing I'm going to say to you, whomever you are considering my words. Every day I fuck it up. Every damn day. Every day my mind waters. Some days I fall asleep sitting up. Every day I start thinking about things, sometimes even purposely, you know, something's on my mind and I let it go. I let myself rehave a conversation I had yesterday or plan a conversation I need to have tomorrow. But every time I catch myself, I bring myself back to my mantra. And I've discussed my mantra before with you guys, but I'm going to discuss it again here. I made it very simple for myself. My mantra is invite God in. It's God with a little g. The reason I say that, it is not a God from any one religion or theology or thought process. It is just goodness. It is good orderly direction. It is gift of desperation. It is the air that flows through the trees and the tides that come in and out and the sun that shines on my face and the love of my children. And it is God to me. And I want it in. I want that energy to flow into my heart every single day as much as possible. And so that's my mantra. And I breathe and I sit in silence and I invite God in over and over and over again. And it brings me back. And when I can stay there for sometimes a precious moment, sometimes all of 30 minutes gets me 3 or 4 moments. I feel that energy. I feel it in my hands as they tingle. I feel it in my solar plexus and my heart. I feel the stillness. And I can promise you it's rewiring my brain because I'm different. I'm more patient. I'm so much more able to pause. I'm much more able to calm myself in this desperation I have to share this message. I'm much more able to practice what I preach, which is, however this goes, it's okay for me. I'm going to get up every day and I'm going to do what I need to do, what I can do in order to bring this message and share it and share my story and be vulnerable and be open and be unafraid and hopefully invite you to do the same. I'm going to do it as best I can. I'm going to show up consistently for myself and for you. And what will be, will be. If one day I get the attention that I have been aching for, I think that's going to be a really great day because I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm still excited and I'm allowed to be excited. But I don't want my excitement to be perceived as anxiety to me because it's no fun to be anxious all the time. And I had a really anxious childhood. And so I don't want to be anxious all the time. I want to practice these tools that I teach. So I've been doing this for almost a year. And another side effect of doing this is the very, really simple but incredibly striking side effect of what it feels like to show up for yourself, to do something even when you don't want to. There are many mornings that I wake up and I don't want to. I wouldn't say every morning, but I'd say 80% of mornings. Like the morning started, I hear my family bustling around, I'm craving a hot tea, I'm craving to stick on the news and get some bad news and all the shitty things that I sometimes want to do. And I say, nope. This is how I live my life. I get up every morning and I meditate. My wife understands that, so she makes space for me to do that. She knows that this is a sacred practice of mine, and so she doesn't say, well, we got to have this conversation right now. She knows, and she gives me the room. My kids know. Nobody busts right into my room in the morning. They know. And if you have really little kids, obviously you have to draw some more, you know, conscious boundaries around it, but it can be done. And it can be fit into any part of your day. You don't need to do it in the morning. You could do it whenever you find time. I like doing it in the morning because I want to get it over with. I want to get it done. I want to know that I will not feel pressure to get something done that I find so essential. But there is a feeling that comes from showing up for yourself no matter what that I know is building my self-esteem in other areas of my life. And you know, if you want self-esteem, if you want to feel good about yourself, it doesn't just come from deciding you're a good person. Self-esteem is built on the back of esteemable acts. Esteemable acts, both for yourself and for others. And it is an esteemable act for me to sit in this meditation and honor my promise to myself and to my higher power every day. And it's changing me in so many subtle little ways. And we do not know how we need to change sometimes. Change feels so daunting, so huge, like a dark cloud. It feels impossible. And so the only way to change is in simple, measurable, small actions. Ability to hold ourselves accountable and ability to show up for ourselves. It brings so much joy and confidence to me about myself. You know, it's funny because I do feel like I'm spiritually called to do this work, but I'm still a human being. I'm still this person that's just a person doing this every day. And so before I started doing this, I was really tempted to feel like a failure all the time, because if your goal is so lofty, if your goal, my goal, is that every person on the planet knows that this work is an option for them. They might not all pick it up. They might not all believe in it. They might not all be ready. But if my goal is that everyone on the planet knows that this work is an option for them, that's a freaking lofty goal. That will require a lot of people's help and a lot of platforms on which I can stand and speak. And maybe it'll happen for me one day and maybe it won't. But the point is, when your goal is that lofty, you are very susceptible to feeling like a big fat failure, because on almost every day, nothing happens. And so this has allowed me to understand that that passion, let's call it passion and put it in quotes, was a bit misguided. It wasn't just passion. It was desperation and fear and self-loathing and bad stories, bad self-talk, things that I don't need that anymore. It's not helping me and it's not helping you and it's not helping the greater cause. And so I really do feel that this meditation practice that I've engaged in has helped in so many different ways in terms of quieting that story and allowing me to invite in all of this amazing knowledge. Sometimes beautiful things come to me in meditation. Oftentimes I share them on this podcast. Like, you'll hear me say, in meditation this morning, it occurred to me, or it came to me in meditation. Meditation is whatever you make it, and it's okay. It's okay to screw it up. It's okay to do it imperfectly. It's okay to say, my brain isn't built for this. It's okay to feel your resistance. But if you can, this is my Christmas gift to you. If you can make a commitment to yourself and start small, let's say, I started at 30 minutes a day, but you do have to realize I was really making a meditation effort prior to that. I was up to like 20 minutes oftentimes. I built up to it. So let's say you're brand new to this and you're hearing this and you're going, I know I need to do this, Nicole. I've known in my gut for so long I need to do this for myself. Let's say that's you. Why don't you start with a commitment of 5 minutes a day, but it's got to be non-negotiable. You will do this for yourself. It is an act of self-love. It's an act of self-care. It's an act of self-help. It's an act of grace. And it's something that you commit to for yourself. What a beautiful commitment. And listen, if you miss a day here and there, it's about forgiveness and it's about getting back on the horse. But I just will speak from my own experience. I cannot tell you how powerful it has been to make it non-negotiable. When I am on a business trip, let's say, and I'm lecturing and I need to be somewhere at 7 o'clock to set up, I get up at 5:30 so I can meditate first. When I'm on vacation with my daughter and, you know, we were looking at colleges and she is going to be in the room with me, I tell her, I'm going to set an alarm. You might hear me. I'm just going to kind of sit on the floor next to the bed so I can have like a little pod of privacy, you know, like kind of just not staring at her right in the face. And I'm going to close my eyes and meditate for 30 minutes. Whatever it takes, I haven't missed a day. And that is such a great thing that I can know about myself. I'm telling you, it just transfers into so many different areas of my life. So I want everything for you. I'm not trying to be pushy. Don't get mad. But I want everything for you. I want peace for you. You know, I know that people say, oh, it's the pursuit of happiness, or it's the pursuit of joy, or it's the pursuit of material wealth. Really what it is in the end is it's a pursuit of peace. We just want to feel settled. We want to feel good when we're quiet. We want to feel able to go to sleep at night, put our head on the pillow with grace. We want peace within. Because there's never anything that's going to stop the frenetic pace of life. That's life. But we can find peace within ourselves, and this is the way. You know, if it strikes you that you wanted to take a meditation class or read some Pema Chodron or, you know, do some sort of structured retreat, that's awesome too. Anything you want to do that serves this greater good is all yours. But if you don't, and if you don't want to spend a dime, and if you don't want to get involved in anything that feels too big or complicated, go on Insight Timer. They don't pay me to say this. No one pays me to say anything on this podcast, regrettably. But go to Insight Timer and download the app. It's a free app. And just you can just go and just to the timer part, there's nothing to purchase. And you just you set the amount of time. You can either sit in silence or there's all sorts of different sounds they offer. I love the bell. It sounds like a singing bowl. And just there's like nothing to it. It's the most simple thing, but so hard because we feel such resistance around it, especially in the Western world. And so I come as a transformed woman, a meditator who thought the last person on the earth that could sit in meditation was this girl. And it's not true. So that is my Christmas gift to you with a whole heart. I hope that this story has brought you some level of awakening. And maybe you thought, that wasn't for me, but maybe you think today, maybe it could be. And you know, listen, let's not for nothing. We're finishing up a pretty shitty year. We're opening a possibility to new connections, new openings and inspiration as we open into 2021. I know it's not a magic bullet, but let's hope it's something. Let's hope it's an opening in some way. And it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to really dedicate ourselves to some self-care practices that are simple and can really change the game. So Merry Christmas. Next week, we'll be together for Happy New Year. That's the way it landed, Friday and Friday this year. So you'll be with me on both of those days. And I have great hope for this coming year. I have great hope and I have great desire, can't help it. And I look forward to whatever it brings. However it goes, it's okay for me and I mean that. All right, my friends. Well, if this podcast is helping you and you're enjoying it, the gift you can give back to me is just going over to iTunes and rating it and reviewing it. Tell me a few words about what it's meaning to you. It means everything to me, and it helps people find the podcast because it helps iTunes recommend it to people. So I really appreciate that. And until next week on New Year's Day, this is Nicole Sachs, and this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. See you then. Bye-bye.